Ladies and gentlemen, brace yourselves for the truth bomb about to explode in your ears. Episode 11 of the Outlaw Crypto Podcast welcomes the indomitable Lunar Mining to discuss the game-changing, the reality-shifting, the mind-bending project that is DarkFi. We're talking about a revolutionary force that stands defiant against the gangster computer god conspiracy, a project that will obliterate the chains of surveillance and usher in a new era of freedom. Lunar Mining, the cryptic crusader, comes armed with the secrets of DarkFi. This isn't just another crypto project. It's an operating system for society itself, a democratic economic experiment designed to dismantle the oppressive state machinery and the surveillance mega machine. Remember James Comey, the FBI director, moaning about the going dark problem? Well, DarkFi embraces the darkness as a beacon of liberty, transforming the very fabric of our digital existence. The mega machine, with its infinite money printing and war-fueled state expansion, has submerged us in an ocean of control and surveillance. For DarkFi is here to shatter these chains with its groundbreaking cryptographic advancements like zero-knowledge proofs. We are entering a new era where our financial and personal privacy can be safeguarded from the prying eyes of the digital overlords. DarkFi is not a corporate sellout. It's the fortress of the free, an impregnable bastion against the tyranny of centralized power. Lunar Mining brings this revolution to life, explaining how DarkFi's cryptographic stack, written in Rust, is the weapon we need to defeat the surveillance state. Lunar Mining reveals how ZK allows us to build completely dark financial markets, an anonymous economic network operating beyond the reach of state control. But it doesn't stop there. Lunar Mining, with her vast knowledge and passion, will guide us through the intricacies of DarkFi and its role in the agorist counter-economics movement. We are not just talking about technology, we are talking about the architecture of a new society. DAOs, DeFi, and autonomous political formations are the building blocks of a parallel free world, where communities govern themselves without external coercion. So tune in to episode 11 of the Outlaw Crypto Podcast and arm yourself with the knowledge to join the resistance. Lunar Mining and DarkFi are paving the way for a future where the gangster computer god conspiracy is powerless against our cryptographic fortresses. This is the dawn of a new age of digital freedom. Let there be dark.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of the Outlaw Crypto Podcast. I'm your host, Paranoia Machinery, and this is a podcasting 2.0 podcast, which means that you can stream sats, do boosts with sats on the Fountain app, and then we also accept Monero and a variety of other privacy coins because we're a privacy-first podcast. Today, my guest is Lunar Mining from the DarkFi project, and I'm really looking forward to this interview because DarkFi is one of the crypto projects in the privacy sphere that I'm super excited about. So welcome to the show, Lunar Mining. How are you? Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Indeed. So you're a developer for the DarkFi project. I was playing around with DarkFi, like through the DarkFi book that's on GitHub, and it was like in a proof of stake format, I guess. And you guys have undergone some radical changes. It's now going to be merge mined with Monero, as I understand it. Would you mind, I guess, summarizing why you guys made the shift and how the project has changed?
Definitely. So yeah, you're correct. On the current book that you can find by going to dark.fi, the instructions are all for a testnet that was deployed pretty much a year ago. And that was a proof of stake testnet. But now the testnet that we're kind of finalizing now, that is pretty much done. We're just kind of battle hardening it before we release. Is a proof of work testnet. And it uses RadnamX, which everyone in the Monero community is well aware of, is a CPU optimized mining algorithm. And it allows you to mine it on consumer hardware And Monero also has like a very robust kind of network of Monero supporters who are mining the project. So we wanted to onboard those people as well. So to explain a little bit more the kind of rationale behind why we chose to make the switch to proof of work. There's a few different reasons. One is that, you know, we were trying to build something called Ouroboros Cryptonus, which is a proof of stake with some interesting kind of privacy properties, where essentially you're able to stake in a anonymous way, which is a nice feature for a proof of stake system because it's more censorship resistant. But the downside is the Ouroboros Cryptonus had never before been implemented. So it was just a kind of scientific paper that we wrote an implementation of. So there was a lot more kind of development overhead involved with that. And also it was a little bit like of a risk because, you know, we had to write all this novel software. It was going to require a lot of auditing. And because of the fact that it's not just straightforward proof of stake, it's also using privacy anonymity aspects, you know, we'd also need to think about that and get that audited. So there was kind of a development challenge there. Then the other kind of main reason was that with proof of stake, you have this problem of when you, like, basically the bootstrap problem. So like when you turn on a proof of stake network, you need to have like a number of nodes that have balances in the coin so that they can start staking. And then, so the question becomes like, how do you pre-allocate those balances in a way that's fair? Because otherwise, if it's not sufficiently decentralized, you do end up with a very oligarchical network where, you know, basically, if you can imagine, you just kind of give to a small number of people the token, then they're going to end up winning the blocks forever. So, you know, you have this pre-distribution problem, this bootstrap problem, mm-hmm. and, you know, you have to find a way to make sure that the token is basically allocated in such a way that's sufficiently decentralized. Otherwise, you end up with these people that have a small number of nodes or individuals that have a balance of the coin. And they end up, because they have the biggest balance, it's a common thing in proof of stake that, like, basically your probability of winning a block is proportional to the balance that you have staked. Mm-hmm. So what that means is if you're a whale and you stake at the beginning, you will win the block rewards forever and, you know, essentially become like a god king of the network. So basically this put us in a difficult position because we would have to figure out a way of trying to pre-allocate Dark in a way that was sufficiently decentralized and fair. And the way that we kind of came to the solution that we came to was actually proof of work, because with proof of work, you know, it's open, anyone can mine. There's no kind of advantage, like disproportionate advantage to like a newcomer or anything. But also what's really nice for us is that it's anonymous. So it's not like something like we're on ETH. You know, if we were to do on ETH, like a giant ICO, then all of the accounts involved would be kind of doxable and traceable on ETH. Whereas with proof of work, it's anonymous. So anyone can just mine that and they don't need to declare on chain that they've done that. We don't need to involve like any of these transparent blockchains at all. And as well, it's a way of kind of underscoring the value proposition of our network, because we're saying like, actually run a node, you know, set it up, and you can mine the token that way. We're not going to do this whole, you know, big distribution on some other chain like Ethereum or whatever it happens to be. So those were the rationales behind making the switch to proof of work. I will say that, like, there are some in the community that still would like to do a proof of stake at some point. But we're aware that as soon as we go live with the proof of work, you know, it's no longer just up to the developers what happens to the chain. At that point, you know, DarkFi is a public good that's owned by all of its community. So the decision also comes down to them whether they want to keep the proof of work or they want to switch to proof of stake in the future.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. With DarkFi, like, I'm a Monero miner. Like, I mine Monero on my laptop when I'm working and stuff like that, using the computer. Like, what would I need to do to also, like, mine DarkFi, I guess?
So the basic idea is that you would have a DarkFi node running at the same time. And that you would be able to, this is my understanding, I haven't worked on the this part of the code base. Okay. But it's something along the lines of, you would be able to, on DarkFi, like, submit the Monero block hash that you mined and claim the Dark token. Something along those lines. But again, I haven't, it's not my area. But we will publish, you know, documentation explaining to the miners, like, closer to the time.
And you say closer to the time, like, what is the timeline? Like, how soon are you guys expecting to, I guess, like, go live or go into, like, a beta version where the community can start playing around?
Yep. So we're about to release a testnet beta, which would be, like, more or less the final testnet. But we still have one more release before mainnet. So we're going to ship this version, which is, like, now-ish. Then in the coming months, let's say, you know, 2 months from now, we want to ship another version which has incentives. So the idea then is that you can actually run, it's like very, very, it's pretty much the same as the mainnet will be, but it's just like a testnet kind of development version. But that will be the true final version. So between now and then, we want to finalize the incentives, which is like mining rewards and stuff. We also want to add some more hardening to the peer-to-peer network so that it's like more attack resistant. And then we're going to ship. And then once we've shipped this second testnet in a couple months' time, we will leave that running for a period of, say, 6 months, to see how it to what happens in the wild. Like, you know, are there any bug fixes we need to do? How does it behave? And then, you know, providing everything is fine, we will ship the mainnet something like 6 months after the. So we're looking at a timeline of maybe in the ideal case, like, if everything works out, about 8 months from launch.
Okay, so not that far off.
Not that far off, no.
With the Ouroboros proof of stake thing, like, since you guys are no longer using it, is that just kind of been backburnered, or are you guys maybe considering implementing it, like, back into the system, like, in the future, I guess?
Yeah, you know, this is a decision we definitely want to make with input from the community. If we do switch to proof of stake, it would be, you know, say, like, 2 years or something after we've had proof of work running, because only after about 2 years of proof of work would we reach a stage where we're, like, confident that the token is, like, sufficiently distributed in the community to switch on the proof of stake. You know, the question of whether we do the same, like, Ouroboros Cryptsinus, we'd certainly need to rework the code base significantly. So I don't know if that's the proof of stake we'd go for. And I don't know if the community will accept that, to be honest. Like, there's many good reasons to do proof of stake, which, you know, which we can discuss. But once you have a blockchain live with real life participants, what we've seen is that there's an inertia to make these kind of changes, especially if they're impacting the bottom line of your like mining community. And you know, I'm fine. I think the Monero mining community, especially, it's very decentralized. You know, a lot of people running basic consumer hardware. They're also at this point, and maybe you can speak to this, but often running it altruistically. You know, Monero is in tail emission, so it's not like they're making giant profits from that, but they do it because they love the project. So I think that's a really, really great community that we want to have on board for DarkFi as well.
Yeah, I would agree 100% that I do it altruistically. I don't make any money on it. I probably lose money doing it, but I do it because I believe in Monero as like censorship resistant digital cash.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So with DarkFi, can you kind of give an overview of what the project is? Like, we've been talking about the change in the architecture of the project, but we never really got into what DarkFi is. Can you give like a brief, like high level overview?
Yeah, totally. So DarkFi is an L1 like blockchain. So it's its own kind of new ecosystem, but it's specifically built for this something that we call anonymous engineering, which is a new concept of basically creating privacy preserving and anonymous applications. So there's been all these new kind of breakthroughs in privacy research, including stuff like I'm sure your community is aware of, like ZK zero knowledge, which is interesting because it allows us to create this like verifiably correct software, but in a way that is privacy preserving and anonymous. So we have ZK, and like it's very generalizable. You can write apps using that, but then there's other areas as well. For example, MPC, multi-party computation, stuff like fully homomorphic encryption, and then other kind of more far out there research in more techniques that you can use to create anonymous applications. So what DarkFi wants to do is basically provide developers with the ability to take from all these different kind of areas and use them to compose these anonymous apps. So, you know, we see that you could do a lot already with ZK. You can assemble like very interesting applications. But then when you combine these other techniques, multi-party computation, fully homomorphic encryption, you're able to build a whole new class of applications that were never before possible. So it's really interesting. And that's basically what DarkFi is trying to do. But as well as trying to give developers, trying to empower them with the tools to build any app that they want that's anonymous and privacy preserving, we also are building some of the apps that we want to see. So on DarkFi now at the moment in the testnet, we have a couple apps already working. So we have the anonymous payments, which is, you know, pretty straightforward, just send and receive money between any asset on DarkFi. We have anonymous swaps between any asset on DarkFi, and there can be any number of assets. So you can mint tokens and contracts similar to how you could on ETH, but you can do it using these anonymous techniques.
So these tokens would be like private by default, I guess, like similar to Monero in regards to privacy?
They could be. So actually, the DarkFi smart contract infrastructure. So we have a machine that allows you to ship any kind of anonymous app. But like, we don't actually force those apps to be anonymous, although as a development culture, like we recommend that, and that's also why we're building these anonymous apps ourselves. But actually, the infrastructure is kind of, it doesn't care how you design the apps. So you could write a like fully transparent coin on DarkFi, But like within, like, so it's not, you could, for example, have the balances public, but the users and their addresses would still be anonymous, like Monero.
Okay.
So it's not like every coin will be Monero level, but they may be. It kind of depends on the developer. But so just to kind of, yeah, to list the apps that we have. So we've got the swaps, the payments. We've got a DAO, which is basically, imagine like a treasury that you have. It's kind of like a multi-sig. So you've got like a treasury that many people own and that they can operate. But it's more advanced than a multi-sig because it's programmable. And you can make decisions about this treasury according to rules, which are basically set by the DAO. And that can also be used by applications, it like a form of programmable protocol owned liquidity. And so this DAO that we've built is fully anonymous. So all the participants are anonymous. The value in the treasury is anonymous. The actions of the DAO are anonymous. So it's a very powerful kind of new primitive, and we built that. So that's working. And we also have an anonymous chat system and anonymous task management. So we've kind of built these two pillars of applications. On the one hand, we have anonymous finance. And on the other, we also have like anonymous coordination, kind of organizational tooling. And we plan to, as we ship DarkFi, we want to onboard a class of developers that are writing their own applications. But we also want to continue to innovate ourselves on building these anonymous privacy preserving apps, because, you know, I mentioned all these different new areas of anonymous engineering. What DarkFi has now is primarily a ZK engine combined with this this WASM runtime that allows us to deploy the apps. And we also have we have a crypto API with signature verification, but we haven't added multi-party computation or fully homomorphic encryption yet. That's a goal of ours, so that we can write more advanced applications. But already with the ZK, you can already build like 99% of the applications that we want to see. But our philosophy is that it's not enough to simply say to developers, you know, build whatever you want, especially because these are new techniques, and the kind of art and science of writing fully anonymous software hasn't been fully developed yet. So we want to show the way to developers by, you know, writing these applications that demonstrate the power of anonymous engineering and kind of guide other developers to ways that you can build in a privacy preserving and anonymous way.
I played with the messaging chat app that you guys made, the WeChat, like anonymous messenger, and it was actually pretty impressive. Is it still working through WeChat, or has it moved like over to mobile completely now?
So the DarkFi chat is basically it's IRC, but it's fully peer-to-peer. So we built this peer-to-peer backend for IRC. And we also added a bunch of encryption. So you have encrypted DMs, encrypted channels, and other cool features. It runs over Tor really nicely. So we have this working. At the moment, you mentioned WeChat. So WeChat is an IRC client. So at the moment with this, the way it works is you run like the dark IRC as a daemon, kind of like you do on Monero with Monero D. So mm-hmm. You run that in the background, and then you attach WeChat or any IRC client as like a front end. You can also do it on the phone by basically you have to compile the daemon separately, and then you add it, you put it on your phone, and you can run it. There are IRC front ends for the phone. So the one I use is called Revolution IRC. So you can attach the front end on the phone as well and use it that way. But we're actually building a GUI as well. So you will not, in the future, you will not have to manually attach the client. You will just have a executable that you can run, and it launches like a chat app. Because we want to onboard, you know, more users, and right now it's like a little bit more advanced. So we're trying to cater to all user groups.
Yeah, that makes sense. Lower the barrier to entry. So with these, I guess, like smart contracts and stuff on DarkFi, do you guys envision like a full like Ethereum, like Web3 ecosystem with like NFTs and like DeFi platforms and flash loans and like all this kind of stuff that we currently see like within the Web3 multi-chain, like EVM based ecosystem in crypto right now?
Yeah, so I actually think we've discussed this a little bit, and I think that flash loans might actually be technically possible with DarkFi. So it's definitely the case that a lot of this stuff we can build anonymously quite easily, like NFTs could totally happen, flash loans, pretty sure we could do. So we could replicate some of that functionality where it's useful and where it's desired. I think the DEX, like the kind of Uniswap type app, is something that a lot of people want. But you know, personally, I'm also very interested in what are the applications that we can build that haven't been built and that, you know, aren't possible unless you have anonymity and privacy. So that's the kind of, I'm really looking forward to those kind of innovations. So Ethereum, they had quite a lot of innovation happen on the chain. So they did a very good job at like fostering that kind of creative community. But also they lacked a direction. So they ended up kind of coming into like what's known in Ethereum as like this degen mentality of, you know, there's no real vision. It's just this kind of zero sum casino where everyone's just out there like trying to scam and trying to hustle, and you know, it's a very hostile place. There's loads of bots doing front running, and so, you know, the difference, we're trying to learn from that experience, and we're trying to say like, can we build a community that is as creative as Ethereum, but you know, maybe a bit more philosophical and kind of with a stronger sense of vision and purpose and directive. So like, how could we inspire a dev community to really build, you know, something focused, something a bit more, to a bit more evolutionary or, creative than just building these financial applications, which are, you know, in some ways just a like more effective, efficient form of, you know, like all that we started criticizing about banks in the first place.
Is there any security risks or like vulnerabilities that could happen, I guess, with having anonymous smart contracts and stuff like that? Like, I've heard some other projects talk about how, like, even though they want to have like private assets or, you know, like they still want to have like the smart contracts be transparent so that you can, I guess, like audit and like make sure that there's no vulnerabilities or like extra coins being minted. Like, are you guys concerned of any of these kind of things?
Yeah, so the contracts on DarkFi are transparent in the sense that like the code is like free software, open source. So anyone can like verify the code themselves that they're running. Also in terms of audits, you know, we've done one audit already, which was an audit of our zero knowledge layer. And we passed with flying colors. Like, they basically said DarkFi is elite and, you know, the implementation was top notch and it had built with a lot of care. So that went well, but we're also systematically getting kind of each aspect of the code base audited before launch. And, you know, also running the testnet for an extended time is a form of is a security precaution, because we want to make sure that there's no potential bugs. So, you know, in terms of the specific bug that you mentioned about the supply, on DarkFi, actually the supply is a So in the smart contracts that you have on DarkFi, there's this idea of public and private, essentially variables, or we call them inputs. But they're basically like information inside a contract that can either be revealed on chain publicly, or it can be revealed on chain encrypted, and you just put the hash, like, so the encrypted hash of some information. And as we know, the way that ZK works is like you have some keys locally that allow you to kind of verify that information is true, even if it's encrypted. But we had this this distinction on DarkFi in the smart contracts between public and private inputs. Mm-hmm. So some information you can actually put on the blockchain publicly. And in the DarkFi coin itself, like DRK it's called, the supply is actually public. So that's something which is different to like, you know, there was this concern with Zek about like an inflation bug and so on. So that's something about DarkFi that's like a little bit different.
And with these kind of apps that you mentioned a few minutes ago that you're most excited about, like apps that haven't been built yet or were previously unable to be built because of the lack of anonymity, like what kind of ideas are you guys kicking around for these apps?
So like the DAO is kind of, I think, a really cool one. We've already built that, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think it's amazing to think like, what are the possibilities when you have a group of people that are able to like make financial decisions in a way that is completely anonymous. A few of us were involved in the Assange DAO, which was an ETH project. It was actually the biggest DAO that ever happened on ETH. We raised 55 million. Wow. And the goal was to free Assange by all means necessary. But we found that like when we raised all this money into the DAO, it created a lot of problems very quickly. Like one is that everyone could see that the treasury holds that balance. So that already puts the multi-stakeholders in a big risk, in a lot of risk. And then as well as that, we were participating in an auction as part of this whole DAO thing. But because our treasury was known, everyone knew what our bid in the auction was going to be. So it basically breaks the game theory of stuff like auctions or anything that requires information asymmetry. Mm-hmm. And then like the kind of biggest issue was the fact that we were an Assange DAO, which was focused, we wanted to free Assange. But basically all of a sudden we had all this money, but we couldn't spend it to free Assange. We were like very limited in what we could do with that money. And as well, like not only were the multi-stake holders compromised, so everyone who had even donated to the DAO was in some ways compromised as well. It was a very hot situation. And I like the anonymous DAO product because it basically protects vulnerable communities like this, mm-hmm. That, you know, they're not liable for the activity that they do on chain, which I think is really powerful. In terms of other apps, you know, there's also cool stuff like you could build, one of the apps we've been kind of discussing is like a anonymous credit network where you can basically like extend lines of credit to anyone. Kind of like a peer-to-peer anonymous banking system where anyone can be a banker and basically, you know, create these lines of credit or like, you know, basically make loans to people in this peer-to-peer and kind of like a way that is, you know, maintained by the peer-to-peer network. So I think that's also really cool. The other one is like there's an app called Ledger Cli, which I use a lot myself for accounting, and okay. It's just like a command line tool where it's very simple, but it's double entry bookkeeping system where you can track balances and credit and debts. And basically, we could implement this tool in a peer-to-peer context, again, to like a peer-to-peer anonymous context. So you could have peer-to-peer anonymous accounting systems. Maybe it sounds a bit boring, but I think that's really exciting and powerful technology. So one of the things that excites me personally is like everything that is involved with empowering communities, you know, to be self-sovereign and make financial decisions and live financial lives in a self-sovereign and anonymous way. That's personally what excites me about the anonymous engineering space. But I'm sure that other people in DarkFi would have different answers to that question.
I think I'm pretty excited about that prospect as well. For the DAO, how do people participate in the governance process?
Yeah, so there's kind of two layers. And I'll just mention first that this is the prototype. It's the first version, but we would like to make DAOs even more flexible in the future so that you could have different types of DAOs. Mm-hmm. But right now we basically just have one type of DAO. And this DAO that we have has two layers of governance. One is the token holders. So it's basically when you create the DAO, you distribute tokens to whoever wants to be in the DAO.
And those would be like DAO tokens.
Yeah, they're governance tokens.
Okay.
Then whoever holds those tokens can basically vote and make proposals. There's a kind of an inner sanctum of the DAO, which is it's not necessarily if you have governance tokens that you're able to actually execute a proposal. It's only if you hold the DAO private key that you're able to execute the proposal. But the DAO private key could be held by everyone. But then, you know, those people who hold the DAO private key would also be able to view the balance of the DAO. So it's worth keeping in mind that there's these kind of two levels of visibility in the DAO. And how each DAO deals with that is kind of up to them. So you could say, like, if we're a DarkFi developer DAO, you could say that the DarkFi devs have the private key, so they can view the balance of the DAO. But the whole DarkFi community is holding governance tokens, so they can vote and they can create proposals. And just to give you an idea then of how that works, I'll talk through the kind of how the DAO works a little bit. So there are these tokens that allow you to vote. Then there are these proposals. And finally, there's the ability to execute a proposal. So a proposal is basically of the form, send this balance of the treasury. So like send this token, whatever it is, Monero, to like this address. And that's a proposal. And then depending on how you've done the proposal, you could say like, okay, we need, or how you made the DAO, we need 90% of all token holders to agree to this proposal for it to be considered valid. And so providing that 90% of all the tokens vote yes, then the people who hold the private key can execute the proposal. So that's kind of the high level rough idea of how the DAO works.
Okay, so for the DAO and like the multi-sig, I guess, with the people with the private keys, like, is there any concerns about centralization? Because I know with like Ethereum, like some of the DAOs are like layer twos and things like that, like are controlled by like 5 of 9 multi-sigs. So they have this aspect of like decentralization theater where they pretend to be decentralized, but really like 5 people could make decisions that the rest of the users of the DAO would be forced to put up with. Like, are you guys concerned about any centralization vector there?
Well, the nice thing about the DarkFi design is that even if the number of people that hold the private key is small, so say it's like 5 people, there's no risk that they could just do decisions against the will of the people in the DAO, against the will of the token holders. They can't, like in the case of ETH, just execute stuff like a 3 of 5. They can only execute stuff if the number of tokens have voted on a proposal. So they're kind of limited by the will of the DAO in an interesting way. So I'd say it's kind of like a controlled centralization where you do potentially have a small number of people holding the private key, but they're basically disempowered by the DAO itself, which, you know, must agree to those decisions for them to go through. And so that's really interesting. But also I will say that like for every DAO, there is a balance between the privacy of the balance, uh-huh, and the centralization of the DAO private key. So basically, you know, you have to make a decision as a DAO. Do we want to keep this limited to a very small number of people that can view the balance? But, you know, then we have this thing that there's only a few number of people holding the private key. Or do we want to give it to a wider distribution, knowing that one of those people could leak the private key and make it public? So that's kind of like a balance. So it's an OPSEC question that each DAO will need to provide their own answer to depending on their needs. But again, the nice thing about DarkFi is that holding the private key does not mean that you can make transactions. It simply means that you can execute proposals that are made by token holders.
Cool. So there's like a system of checks and balances there.
Exactly.
Nice. Another thing I noticed about DarkFi, like the project, the culture of the participants, is this whole Lunar Punk like philosophy. Can you kind of explain what Lunar Punk is and how it differs from Solar Punk and why you guys are like focused on this Lunar Punk philosophy?
Yeah, for sure. So like Lunar Punk is probably best thought of as a revival of Cypherpunk. But it also takes some elements from Solar Punk, but basically improves them. So in a way, it's a hybrid of Cypherpunk and Solar Punk. And what I mean by that is that, you know, Solar Punk is all about optimism and, you know, creating a better future and, you know, moving away from the kind of cyberpunk dystopia. And then Cypherpunk is all about using encryption, you know, to basically fuck the system. Mm-hmm. And Lunar Punk is kind of a combination. So it says like the only way that we can actually build a better future per the Solar Punks is through encryption. And that the Solar Punks had kind of made the mistake, at least on ETH, of being like way too into like fully transparent everything. And by doing that, they found themselves in a potential dystopia. So they basically contradicted themselves. So, you know, that's a little bit what Lunar Punk is. In terms of DarkFi, you know, I don't think DarkFi is necessarily like 100% only Lunar Punk. You know, there's definitely some cypherpunk and kind of crypto anarchist and like agorist elements as well. We're all of these things. We're like a faction which contains like many many types of allied forces. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're like myself, I wrote about Lunar Punk some years ago, so I kind of introduced that concept to DarkFi, that's probably why DarkFi has become associated with the concept of Lunar Punk.
Thank you for that, because I was not really familiar with that term or like philosophy, I guess. What are your thoughts on this like current war on privacy, like as somebody that's working to roll out privacy tech and anonymity like on a large scale?
I mean, like it's fucked up, you know, like, but it's also very predictable. Like we've been talking about this for years. It's also why we're called DarkFi. DarkFi, the name comes from this speech from the FBI where the leader of the FBI is complaining about the going dark problem. So he says like, the encryption is creating these safe spaces for criminals, and he calls it going dark. So the DarkFi, the dark in DarkFi comes from this, and it's basically saying like, you know, we are your worst nightmare. And like fulfilling this prophecy of like whole areas of the internet going dark and becoming like permanently unreachable. So, you know, that's where we come from. But later then, like in the last years, Lunarpunk was also about a movement to kind of recognize the impending war on crypto that was emerging. And we had this in the Lunarpunk manifesto that we put out a few years ago, we had this theory that like the more people try to stop privacy tools, in a weird paradoxical way, it's like an upside down kind of way, they will actually empower privacy, because they will, you know, keep reinforcing its the need for it. So you can see this in countries where privacy is the hardest to get, it's also the most valued commodity. So there's a feedback loop where the more this escalates, the more privacy tools basically grow and become dominant. So that's our perspective. At the same time, you know, obviously it's very challenging for us working in this context. It puts us in great kind of personal risk. So, you know, that's something that, you know, is very challenging, but we're trying to build DarkFi in such a way that, you know, basically we want to make it so that anyone can work on DarkFi as a developer in a way that is completely anonymous. So we have it now that you can, we don't use GitHub, we use something called Codeberg, which you can very easily create accounts using Tor. So you can basically, using like fully over Tor, work on DarkFi in a way that's basically anonymous and deniable. And that's really important for that, because for us, because we want developers to be able to join us without fear that they're going to be persecuted for that. And so our kind of end goal, or like the desired point that we want to get to, is like to get DarkFi to the point where even if there is this global crackdown that's happening, DarkFi will continue. And, you know, there's this thing, I'll just say quickly, that a lot of people, they have the way they talk about technology and the way they talk about surveillance and the crackdown on privacy is as if it's like inevitable. So they're like, oh, the AI is just going to keep getting bigger. You know, privacy, that's a thing of the past. And, you know, it's inevitable that our computers are spying on us and our homes are spying on us and our cars and our toothbrushes and our fridges and everything else is collecting data. That's just the way, that's just progress. That's just the way technology goes. And, you know, I just want to say that it's definitely not inevitable. Technology does not move in one direction. It can go in many different directions. And that's what DarkFi is trying to prove. But, you know, one thing that's true about technology is that certain things are irreversible, like certain actions, once they happen, cannot be undone. So I think this is true for DarkFi. And like, we're going to release this, you know, hopefully we're going to do it this year. DarkFi is, you know, it's free software. We're going to put it out there completely free and open. Anyone in the public can use it. And you can't undo that act. So that's how I comfort myself, basically.
Yeah, no, once the genie's out of the bottle, once Pandora's box has been opened, I think that is irreversible. And like, I think we need something like this in the face of like this total surveillance panopticon that they're trying to construct around us with like CBDCs and, like you said, like your appliances, everything that you have, like connecting online and reporting data about you and selling it to God knows who. With this DarkFi project, like, I know some of you guys are kind of public. Like Amir is pretty well known. His involvement is like not a mystery. Are you guys concerned like that you will be like persecuted for your participation in the project?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's very likely that we will be. So you know, that's a risk that we're taking, because we, like, all of us have our own reasons, but you know, personally, I think that surveillance is the greatest threat to freedom today. So, you know, I'm willing to risk my own safety to fight back against that, basically.
Well, that's very noble and commendable. I agree that surveillance is probably the biggest threat to our freedom today, especially like with how you see like these projects, like these credit cards that will shut off automatically, like once you've like surpassed your like carbon allowance, or some of these machinations that they have to just control your finances, you know, like censor your transactions for posting something on social media. Like, we do need anonymity and financial privacy in order to have sovereignty and freedom. With this project, like, have you noticed that people are excited about it, or are there like sectors of like the crypto community that are like, ew, it's privacy, like it's only for criminals? Like, what's the attitude you've seen from the community?
Yeah, it's a good question. Unfortunately, privacy is quite niche, you know. That's also why like we love Monero, and is because like that's probably the community that we see most eye to eye with. But when you start going into stuff like Bitcoin or Monero, or sorry, Ethereum, then you do run into people who, you know, like this attitude I was trying to explain before, where it's like they just think that surveillance is kind of inevitable, and you know, there's nothing we can do, and they have this kind of sense of learned hopelessness, this like profound disempowerment, where, you know, they don't see the point of privacy. They don't see that the user wants privacy or cares about privacy. And they're much more interested in, you know, basically the grift and trying to make money in the shitcoin casino. That's what we've seen. I mean, talking specifically, not so much about Bitcoin, obviously, but in the other chains. So, you know, it's mixed. But I will say that DarkFi hasn't been, because we've been very focused on building, it's been a long process, and you know, it's a lot of technical work, a lot of software being written. So we haven't been focused so much on the communication aspect. So it's hard for me to say like where the public or like the people stand on this outside of crypto. I don't know. Like, I think there's a fair chance that privacy is something that's quite abstract to people, and that they're not aware that that there's need for it.
Until they are,
exactly. So I think that's pretty much the situation. But it would be similar, I think, to Monero, in that you know, it's a similar user base, basically.
I know you've mentioned Monero as like a kindred community in the cryptosphere. Like, what about these other privacy coins? Like, we've seen things like Zeno, which are kind of pursuing similar goals as DarkFi, like private smart contracts and like tokens and stuff like that. Basic Swap Dex is another project that comes to mind that's like kind of uniting privacy coins and providing like a platform where you can trade them back and forth, like in a decentralized way. I know you guys mentioned you're going to have your own Dex, but are you guys like looking to integrate with any of these other like privacy projects that we see in the ecosystem?
Yeah, so I think there's strength in numbers, and I love hearing about other projects, because, you know, it's like I feel more confident that, you know, we're that this is happening, that, you know, the privacy is evolving in this exciting directions, because you know, it'd be worse if it was just us. But yeah, and I also think that as much as we can work together and build like an ecosystem with financial flows like between networks, I think that's definitely the end goal. But then how you achieve that is obviously quite challenging. But you know, we do want to kind of on DarkFi, we want to at least have the ability to like get Monero onto DarkFi in a trustless way. The same for Ethereum, that you could like move your assets in between the chains. Uh-huh. But then like after that point, things start to get a bit tricky. There is like there's this thing called IBC, Inter-Blockchain Communication.
Yeah, it's like Cosmos or something, right?
Yeah, Cosmos has this, but a few projects have this. So that's basically like a common standard for like how blockchains communicate for each other, toward each other. And then it allows you to very easily do stuff like trigger smart contract calls like across different chains. So it allows for interoperability and financial flows between networks. So that's a bit further out. And to be honest, that's not DarkFi's focus. Like we're much more interested in finishing our L1 and getting that built out. But at the same time as we're doing that, there's a bunch of other very intelligent people that are working on interoperability. So we're kind of hoping that by the time we get this shipped, other people will have made breakthroughs in the interoperability area that will allow us to more easily connect up to these different anonymous DEXs and blockchains and so on.
Now, because you guys are pioneering these like advanced cryptographic techniques, is there any issue with like interoperability? Does it make it harder? I know like Particle was like the first one to be able to solve like bidirectional atomic swaps with Monero because Monero doesn't have like scripting because of the cryptography. Are you guys facing any issues like that as far as like interoperability goes?
I think it's similar challenge. Definitely, if you're bridging with something without smart contracts like Monero, there's a challenge. But as you said, there's been solutions to this. The Ethereum is easier because you can have smart contracts, but then you have this other problem with ETH where it's not anonymous.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are unique challenges to kind of every case, and definitely the interoperability is not straightforward. But the ideal for us is if the blockchain is like both has smart contracts and is anonymous, then that's like the ideal kind of atomic swap conditions for us, because if there's other chains that are like competitors or offering similar tools to DarkFi, that's great because we can easily kind of form links with those communities, like technical links. But yeah, if there's no smart contracts, it's harder, especially to do bidirectionality. You might be able to go from DarkFi to Monero, but back in is like more challenging and so on.
With like the Ethereum ecosystem, are people from Ethereum like working to employ some of like the zero knowledge cryptography that you guys are using like in Ethereum projects? Like have other blockchains or projects come to you guys and like taken some of the techniques you guys have created and employed them like in other projects, like maybe even transparent chains?
So the way that would probably work is on like an ETH L2. The issue with ETH is that it's the EVM can't really support like hardcore cryptography. It's not built for that. And it's just basically the gas limit is your main constraint. So that's why it's so expensive to do stuff like if you ever use like Tornado Cash in the past, you know, it's like very expensive in terms of gas costs. That's because of the kind of scaling issues with ETH. So they do have privacy projects, but they're on the layer two. So I'm pretty sure something like Aztec is an L2, although they've been a bit mixed in their messaging. And also they haven't open sourced much code. So I don't really know about what Aztec is doing, but what I've heard is that there's some kind of L2 on ETH. And they'd be somewhat similar to DarkFi, again, without having like actually read any of their code, but just like from their docs and stuff, I think it's like a similar offering.
Okay. With Monero, we hear a lot about how like the cryptography that Monero employs makes it less scalable. Does DarkFi face any issues in regards towards scalability since you guys are using this advanced cryptography?
Yeah, well, I'll be honest, like we have not been focused on scalability. We're really focused on the anonymity question. So there will be room for like improving and optimizing that, like as we go on, as we go forward. So let's see, you know, we decided we want to ship. There's that kind of folk wisdom of like release early and often. So we just want to, our focus is anonymity, privacy. We want to build that, ship, and then, you know, iterate and keep improving DarkFi so that it becomes like more scalable and like with more features, etc. But I think in terms of Monero's cryptography, the bigger issue for me is not so much the scaling as it is the question of the ring signatures.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a linkability issue in ring signatures. And there is an issue where you can increase the ring size and that will increase the anonymity set. But that does have a impact on scaling. So it's basically linear as far as I know, like the bigger the ring size, like the bigger in the exact linear proportion, like the bigger the strain on the blockchain. So what's nice about some of the ZK techniques is that they have a logarithmic kind of relation. So you can actually massively increase the anonymity with a very small impact on the scaling. So that's a really nice property. And I know there has been a lot of research into improving this aspect of Monero. I think there's been some work by the cryptographer Liam Egan on this, and also Amir from DarkFi contributed a bit to some discussions on GitHub, made some proposals for Monero. So I know there's a lot of research in this, but for me, that's like the most bullish thing for Monero is to solve the rig signatures issue.
Yeah, I actually just earlier this week did an interview with Luke Parker, Kayaba Nerf. He's a Monero developer and security researcher, and they just got a proposal for full chain membership proofs like funded. And he's currently working on that proposal, like to get it implemented. From what I understand, like he's like in the initial phases, so we probably won't see it for like another like year or so, like in Monero. But they are working right now, like as we speak, to improve this ring signatures problem and change the anonymity set to where instead of like 16 rings or like 128 rings or whatever, like they're going to be able to use every UTXO from the whole history of the chain. So that should greatly improve.
Amazing.
Privacy. Like if Monero implements full chain membership proofs, will that be something that we see DarkFi kind of like follow along and implement as well, or no?
I don't think we have the same kind of problem space as Monero.
Okay.
So like we don't have the ring signatures or anything. So we don't need that. But can you explain again the full set membership proofs? Because I had a phone call just now.
Yeah.
you were saying like that the UTXO set doesn't keep growing or something?
No. I think it takes like every, like there's TXOs, right? Like it takes like every, I guess output or is it input? What, like from the whole chain, like from all the transactions on the chain. So like the anonymity set, rather than being like 16 rings like it is currently, or like even 128 rings like they were talking about doing with Seraphis, like it will be like the whole chain's history could be a ring, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm explaining it good because I'm not really a cryptographer. I'm kind of a layman, but.
Yeah, I haven't been following the research very closely, but DarkFi is not using the ring signatures, so this isn't something that this isn't a problem that we need to solve.
How are you guys doing it? Like, what's your approach? How's it different?
So it's actually more close to what Zcash has. So there's something called the sapling payment scheme that's used by Zcash.
Okay.
But we've basically generalized this to smart contracts. So it's a cryptographic protocol that allows for anonymous payments in a way that that has a giant, huge, near infinite anonymity set.
Mm-hmm.
So there's basically these two kind of parts to each transaction. There's like a mint and a burn. And each output is a burn and each input is a mint. But there is a protocol that is involved in these mint and burn steps, which involves like the creation of these kind of anonymous encrypted kind of pieces of information that are released on chain. Yeah, so it's basically like, again, it's based on the sapling protocol, which is used by Zcash, but DarkFi generalizes this to the smart contracts. So we basically have two smart contracts in ZK that DarkFi uses. Like, one is the mint and then the other is the burn. And basically what the mint phase does is like we create a what's called a commitment, which is a like encrypted hash of some data. So like we create this commitment C, which is bound to some public key, like which is your public key. And then we reveal that commitment. Remember, the commitment is an encrypted hash. So we reveal that on chain, and that's added to the Merkle tree. We do the commitment, we reveal it on chain, and then later when we want to actually spend that coin, we basically reveal a value that was an input to that commitment, a special value which is called the nullifier.
Okay.
And when we reveal this nullifier on chain, it basically means that coin C cannot be double spent. So like that's why by putting out this nullifier, we basically burn the coin C. So that's the kind of quick version. But what's important to notice is like when we made this commitment, like C, which was an encrypted hash of attributes, and we put it on chain, that C, you know, it can be something like a coin, you know, like it can be like it can contain information about an asset. But it could also be something, it can be anything, actually. So this is where like DarkFi is like highly programmable. So you could put any kind of data into that commitment, and you can make this anonymous commitment to any number of things. So this is something we use a lot in the design of the anonymous DAO, where when we actually create the DAO on chain, it's a commitment to a number of values. We call this on DarkFi a bulla, because in ancient Mesopotamia you used to have these clay tablets that would contain clay balls, basically balls made out of clay.
Okay.
And inside the balls you had all these tablets that had financial instruments in them. So the bulla is like a meta financial instrument that like contains all this other stuff. So we have these basically encrypted bullas on chain on DarkFi that that can contain coins, but they can also be DAOs. They can contain like all sorts of interesting financial objects in a way that is encrypted and secure, because we have this double spend protection as well.
With Bitcoin, we've seen like the witness data being stuffed with arbitrary data to create ordinals and like stamps and these other things that like Bitcoiners are very upset about. Like they see this as less than desirable. Is there any potential for abuse of like people stuffing arbitrary data in the bulla that you're describing?
Yeah, I mean, but DarkFi has a very different attitude to Bitcoin, where Bitcoin is like a money chain. You know, it's more like Monero. It's like cash.
Yeah.
But DarkFi is like, it actually wants to be generalizable. So we would basically not have a problem with people putting like ordinals or like whatever it happened to be onto these bullas. It's fine. As long as like basically they pay the transaction fees to store that on the blockchain, that's considered valid. It's not considered spam.
With Monero being cash, I guess, and DarkFi being more of like a Ethereum style token with a variety of use cases, like what's the role of the DarkFi token itself within the ecosystem? I mean, are you guys using it for fees? You're not using it for governance, because there's other governance tokens for the DAOs, right? So like, what is the use case, I guess, for the DarkFi token itself?
Yeah, so transaction fees is one main thing. And so it's like a consensus token, right? Like it's
okay.
It's there to reward miners or in the future stakers. So that's basically how we incentivize the hardware layer. But then yeah, it's also this transaction fees. And you know, we've been we're still tweaking the kind of the numbers, but the general idea is that we're trying to learn from different projects, right? So we're planning to do something like a EIP 1559, where we actually burn a proportion of the transaction fee, and we're considering that because we like how this basically means that you're incentivized to use the chain. Because using the chain is actually applying a deflationary pressure on the token. And you're also balancing the kind of the different interests. So like typically miners, they always want you to increase the inflation, because that's, you know, that's how they're paid.
Yeah.
But then token holders, they want to decrease inflation, because they want less supply. So there's like this kind of, there's this like weird war that happens. But what's nice about the fee burning is that it aligns the incentive. So you're able to continue paying miners, but also without endlessly inflating the supply, providing that there's a constant burn. Ideally, you know, you end up with this stable kind of equilibrium of supply. So that's like the long-term DarkFi inflation goal, is like this supply equilibrium. But
is there a cap again, supply, or is it like Monero where there's like an infinite like tail emission or whatever?
Yeah, so the current design, again, we're tweaking the numbers, is tail emission with fee burning.
Okay.
So, you know, basically balancing, trying to achieve that equilibrium effect.
With this fee burning effect and the deflationary pressure, like that will make the token price go up at some point in the future, right?
Well, the big thing I think in terms of token price is to actually have like a robust ecosystem, and like, you know, basically demand for the token, in terms of like people need the token so that they can use the chain, and there's like a lot of people using your chain.
Yeah.
So like that's like, I think that's the main thing. And that's like the biggest challenge that we have, is to like, how do we get people on DarkFi and like using the apps and etc. So yeah, I think that's I don't know for sure, but I think possibly more than the actual token engineering, I think more important is like, is this like demand side tokenomics of like, like who's using your chain and you know, that being the main kind of value proposition for the coin.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you feel is important for the audience to know?
I guess like where can they find out more is like, so a good place is the website dark.fi. So on there you have a link to the documentation, and the DarkFi book, and it tells you how to run nodes. We still have to update it for the current testnet we're about to ship. So like, please don't try to run the testnet until like give it like a week or two and we've shipped the new version, and then please do run it. But right now it's still proof of stake, and that blockchain, I don't think it's being maintained right now. So like, don't bother with that, but please do run the chat app. And like, if you can get that running, I think for Monero community, it should be very easy because you guys are used to like running daemons. So, you know, just like run the, it's called Dark IRC. It's a daemon. If you go to the repo and you build it, you just write make Dark IRC. You run it, you attach a front end, come into the Dark IRC chat and say hello. That's like the best thing you can do in terms of contributing. There's also on the docs on the book, there's a page on contributing, which gives instructions and everything, how to set that up, and also how to contribute to DarkFi anonymously as a developer. Then for people who are like allergic to command line, you know, you can also join the Telegram. We're also building an app for you guys. So like eventually soon you will be able to just like run an executable and like join the community that way. So like, you know, we'll get there. But for now, you can check out the Telegram group. I'm pretty sure it's linked on the website. You can follow our blog. You can follow our Codeberg. You can follow our Twitter, etc. We're not that super active on Twitter, to be honest, but we probably should be. But anyway, so yeah, stay tuned. And it's going to be a big year for DarkFi. There'll be a lot of announcements.
Okay, so I tried running the DarkFi blockchain. Like I was running it, the proof of stake version, like, I don't know, a few months back, and then I got a new computer and I lagged on trying to install it again, the testnet, and then I did it recently, like a month ago, and realized that like nobody's using that chain or it's like no longer functional. So that's super exciting to hear that you guys are shipping the new testnet within the next couple of weeks. Well, Rose, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure to interview you and learn so much about DarkFi because, like I said, I'm super excited about the project. I can't wait until you guys launch it and we can start trying to be anonymous financially.